welcome back into episode 2 of Cult Film Cafe. This one is on the Warriors. If you haven't already listened to episode 1, I advise you to go and listen to that before you continue listening to this one, because we have done a quick deep dive in on the Warriors and given our opinions of the film. I am also joined by my illustrious co-host, Kenzie McLean.
Hello.
And Andrew Kill is a guest on the pod.
Hi, welcome back.
So basically, I want to let you know how this episode's going to work on Cult Film Cafe. So basically, we as a pod have devised our own 8 rules of Cult Film Cafe, which we are trying to tick off in terms of determining whether a movie should be classed as a cult film or not. I'll just give you a rundown of them. So they are low budget, non-mainstream or box office flop, rewatchability, quotability amongst fan bases, elements of audience participation, not well received by critics and reviewers at the time, explores controversial subjects, topics and themes, engage with a culture or community in some way, and it cannot claim to be a cult film from the get-go. When it comes to The Warriors, I feel like us three believe that it hits quite a lot of those markers.
It's ticking all the boxes, really.
Yeah, it's one of those films that is definitely a cult film. It's quite easy to see once you watch the film. But yeah, we're just going to break it down and we're going to take it sort of bit by bit. But we can probably agree that this is a low budget film, even though, I mean, $4 million might have seemed like a lot of money back in 1979. But when you equate that to today's money, it's about sort of $14 million.
Yeah, a lot of the scenes are shot at night, and it's cheaper to shoot at night no matter where you are in the world. But this is shot in the Bronx, in Manhattan, in New York. There are daytime scenes, though, at the end, and there was going to be daytime scenes at the beginning, but it got cut from the film. The opening shot, it's so good despite its budget, though, and I think that's the mark of a cult movie. It's when you know that despite the budget, they still try to get as much of the just amazing cinematography as they can with the Wonder Wheel, which is right at the beginning.
When I first watched it, I didn't realise the film was as old as it was. Honestly, I'm really shocked about how it looks. Some of the shots look great in this film. That's one aspect of the film where I don't think it's aged that badly compared to other films that are even newer than it from the early 80s.
Yeah, I think what the film has going for it is it's all practical. Like, there's no use of sort of special effects and stuff like that. I mean, everything's shot like on location. And obviously you can tell with the budget that it didn't have a budget for like CG or, I mean, early CG special effects. I mean, it's much cheaper, as we know, to shoot practical effects. I mean, you don't have that shooting at night. I'm guessing, Andy, that the reason it's cheaper to shoot in and around New York at night is because they would have to shut down businesses during the day.
Yeah, a little fun fact about shooting in New York: there are only 3 alleyways you can shoot in logistically, because you have to pay businesses, as well as ease of access for deliveries that are trying to get in and out. Obviously, buses and trucks need to make use of alleyways to deliver produce. But The Warriors was shot mostly in subways, in subway lines and stuff, which is, it plays into the narrative of the film, so it makes sense from that point of view. But when it's outside, it is at night, in closed off spaces and environments. If not that, they do have a couple of scenes that take place in public parks.
One positive tick on the rules for The Warriors.
Yeah.
So we're going to move on to rewatchability. Andrew touched upon it briefly on episode 1. I think, even though I've only seen the film once, it's probably going to be something that I'll rewatch probably quite a lot. Like, it's probably going to be something that, if I'm looking for something just to quick to watch, it's quite a tight, like Kenzie said in the first episode, it's a 90-minute film. It's really tight, really quite fast. It doesn't drag. There's not really any slow moments in it. And I think that makes a film more rewatchable.
It's very fast-paced. It's one of those films, it's just like, because there's certain films that can be really good, but they're slow burns. It's just like, you've just got to be in the right kind of frame of mind, or just like right mood to watch it. But a film like this is one of those type of films you're just like, I feel like, just chuck that on. Like, if you were if you switched to like a TV channel and that was on, and you weren't doing anything, you'd probably just watch it, because it's just easy to watch, and it's just got a lot of things in it that make films rewatchable. It's got good quotes, it's got kind of good action, fast pace, good score. It's just an easy to watch film.
Narratively, it's not very complex. I mean, it's about gangs essentially and survival. Yeah. There are a lot of people that are into that sort of lifestyle back then, anyway. I'm not so sure about now in the day of social media and stuff, but that sort of ties into the next point, I suppose. So I won't step on any toes here, but it's got so many bits of clips you could watch on YouTube nowadays of, say, the baseball furies and stuff like that. So the rewatchability comes from the entertainment of it. It's not complex. You don't have to even watch it from the very beginning. You just cut straight into the action, I suppose.
Yeah, I think that's the sort of definition of rewatchability. What we're trying to get here is, I mean, even if it's 20 minutes into the film and you flick on a channel, you're probably going to stay for the rest of it, just purely because you know that it's a good film to watch and it's enjoyable no matter where you jump in. You don't necessarily need to watch it from the start to get enjoyment out of it, and I think that's a big positive of the film. And obviously, one of these factors that rewatchability does make films become more cult, in a sense, because you're rewatching it over and over again, and it ties into the next point, which is quotability amongst fan bases, which basically, if you're rewatching a film over and over again, you're more likely to take in lines of dialogue and memorize the lines in the dialogue and quote it amongst your friends who are also passionate about the same films.
Right off the bat, I think the most quotable line is with Luther in the car as he's, you know, stalking the Warriors. He's got the bottles, you know, Warriors come out to play.
Warriors come out to play. Warriors come out to play. Warriors come out to play.
It's so good, man.
My favourite has to be Ajax when he says to the baseball furies, he's like, I'll take that baseball bat and shove it up your ass and turn it into a popsicle. I love that one. It's just so many. Or just even the simple one, when the guy just goes, who are the Warriors? Or anything Cyrus says, because the way he says everything is just so quotable.
That's funny. Like, I think I was speaking to somebody a few days ago about it and said that I was doing a podcast and starting one, and the first episode was the Warriors, and his was most quotable line was, can you dig it?
Yeah,
which is the big one at the start where he just repeats it over and over again. But yeah, there is loads. We've just given three examples, and to be honest with you, you could probably watch the film over and over again and you'll find more and more lines of dialogue and quotable lines in it. The first three on the list and big ticks for the Warriors. Now, this one's elements of audience participation. Now, this one might seem a bit weird to people, but what I mean by that is there is some cult films out there that when you watch films either in the cinema or at home, and there's like you've got these fan bases and subcultures within them, there's actions and stuff to do, or if you something a bit like the Rocky Horror Show where people dress up, and I think the Warriors is probably more akin to that, like the Rocky Horror, where people that if there's reruns of it over anniversaries or certain times, you're probably going to get a lot of the fans dress up like the gangs from the film.
Yeah, it's just because all the gangs are so different from each other. You got some bland ones in there, but even those guys, you know, you'll get cosplay of the Rollerblade dudes, for example, which they just wear suspenders. But there are actual gangs out there, quotes of people that go about Coney Island right now wearing the colours of the Warriors that aren't really gangs. They're more to help the community. But that's definitely the sort of reach this film has in terms of audience participation. It just has that loyal fan base that they really dig that sort of lifestyle.
It's really just the fans of the film just choose their favorite gang. They're just like, that's the one I like, and whatever they do, like I never heard about that, but that's quite a cool thing.
True.
It's you can still buy the outfits of a lot of them. I saw you can still get like the Warriors jacket, even though it's slightly expensive. But yeah, and if if it's ever shown anywhere, I bet people, most people who were fans of it, probably do dress up to probably watch it sometimes.
Even in the film, when we meet the female character, her name is escaping me currently, who plays Mercy, and that's one of the things. She's so adamant that she wants a waistcoat. When they first talk, they're like, "I want one of them."
Yeah, cause, I mean, the film is about turfs and colours and representation, what that means to them. So, you know, if you're part of a gang, you don't want to give your colours away so easily, or even take them off just to cross a street.
Some of the gangs have distinguishedly better outfits and or kind of what I would say are better outfits. Yeah, I would say that the two items of clothing that I would like to own is obviously a warrior's waistcoat, and I wouldn't mind Luther's denim jacket. I think that would be pretty cool.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I want to dress up as a baseball fury, to be honest. I think that would be quite
That'd
fun.
That'd be so kind of tough to do that every day. If you're in universe with the Warriors and you lived in New York, you lived in the baseball fury zone, you want to join a gang, it's got to be the baseball furies. Can you imagine having to put on makeup every single night just to be part of a gang? This is a bit of a hassle, really, compared to putting on a denim jacket to be a part of the Rogues crew with Luther.
Can you dig it?
Yeah, and obviously, like, that's elements of audience participation can be taken in multiple ways, but I would say that for the Warriors is probably the big one, and I do think that in America, especially in New York, whenever they're showing screenings of this, that you will get fans. Like Andrew said, that even in Coney Island, I mean, I think that the gangs probably became synonymous with that area and the colours, and like you say, it's probably just been picked up in the culture over there as well. So that's another huge tick on the list for the Warriors. Now, the next one on the list is not well received by critics and reviewers at the time. Now, that's something that kind of shocked me a wee bit, but not really when you kind of break it down and you kind of think of the films that people like, you know, that critics like, you know, like a Roger Ebert. Like, I mean, you kind of get a sense of the movies that he's going to like.
Yeah.
And based on sort of information and research, I found that the Warriors received negative reviews from contemporary critics.
Yeah, I think critics were expecting a different film, really. I think they were expecting a much more kind of grittier kind of crime film about gangs, and we got a kind of more kind of colourful film that doesn't really take itself too seriously. And they kind of criticise it for its kind of wacky dialogue and its everything, like the action of it and the style of it. But yeah, I guess it just, I don't know if it came out in the wrong time, because I don't think a film like that could really come out now and be like the same. But, you know, critics sometimes, it seems like the type of film that you think it will probably get whacked down by critics, and look at it now, it's seen as like a big cult film. It's, mm-hmm. You can kind of see how that happens.
Am I right in saying that they were suspecting sort of gang violence during the sort of release and around the release of the film?
The director, he had said that was most likely the cause. That, you know, if you got a theatre, you got two gangs going to the same theatre, there's probably going to be violence and fights breaking out. And sadly, that did affect the marketing of the film, which I was going to say it could have contributed to the return that it got at the box office, but it did make double its budget at the box office.
It was about 16 million, was it not?
Yeah,
about I think it was about 22 million, which it's not a flop by any means. Like, no. But it's not something that's been grossed 20 times its budget. You know, it made sufficient money, and I think, like, but I mean, obviously, it's one of those films that, I think at the time, I mean, talking about esteemed film critics and Roger Ebert, I'm just looking, and when he wrote his review for the Chicago Sun-Times, he gave it 2 out of 4, ooh. Which, I mean, he rates films out of 4 stars, and it's always been his way. I mean, that's like a 50% film, but I feel like the film is so much better than that, in my opinion. I think it's, but it has went on. I think there was a lot of films in the sort of 70s and 80s that critics have went back and rewatched later and maybe changed their mind, or the sort of newer critics have done that. And just reading it, obviously, with it gaining the sort of cult film status, which is surrounded by the Warriors, I mean, it's got an 87% approval rating on Rotten Tomatoes, which is pretty high.
That's pretty high.
Really high. So it has obviously found its market. The next, I suppose the next few might not be as sort of ticks in the boxes, but explores controversial topics, subjects and themes. I think, I mean, gang warfare is probably the sort of subject matter here, or gang culture is maybe more to put it that way. I think that's the sort of the theme of the movie.
Yeah, I mean, the gangs aren't exactly, you know, you got some colourful dresses, but they're not exactly, you could tell just based on their class, they're quite low class, which is a theme that was touched upon very briefly near the end, subtly. It's not up front with its theme of class divide, but you tell by, you know, the gangster's appearance and whatnot that they're not really high class people.
Yeah, I mean, I know the scene you're talking about. It's they're riding the subway or the train, and you've got these well-dressed two young couples come on, and they're pristine, and they're wearing dress suits and dresses, and do you know, they've got all that smart attire on, and across from them you've got the Swan and Mercy, who are, if you look at them, and the camera does a good job of panning up and down, and they're dirty, and they've got dirty feet, dirty hands, dirty fingernails, and I mean, you've even got that scene where Mercy goes to try and fix her hair, and Swan's like pulls her hand down and goes, "We don't have to change your appearance or be presentable for these people. You can just be who you are." But I think there's more. I think that on the list of films, there's probably going to be more that are bigger talking points for sort of controversial topics. So, I mean, I wouldn't necessarily call it super controversial, but I get maybe at the time, because sort of gang cultures and things weren't necessarily explored a lot through films, that it could be deemed that. Engage with a culture or community in some way, and I suppose that it does, like we spoke about audience participation. I think if you're from that area or those areas of the film, I think you will, it's probably a film that these people probably watch quite regularly or very, very familiar with.
I mean, one of the biggest gangs in the movie, the Gramercy Riffs, is named after a park in New York called Gramercy Park. So it's definitely for people. It would definitely engage a lot more with people that are actually in New York and, I guess, are involved with that sort of lifestyle.
I mean, yeah, it's a gang film. That's, I think, any, and especially since it's set in, it's New York, right? So, yeah, I feel like it's really going for a kind of, I don't know if it really wanted that, like, kind of audience, but it's really appealing to that audience. I feel like anyone who also is into kind of gangs and stuff like that as well, and they've got so many different ones and stuff like that. So yeah,
I also think that it kind of crosses over to maybe UK audiences, specifically young people at that time. You know, Kenzie spoke a lot about his dad being a lover of the film, and I'm guessing he was a relatively young man when it came out. So he was probably right in the sort of target demographic. I don't see a film like this being targeted to sort of 40 plus year olds, you know. It surely was targeted of at young people. It was a young, youthful film for young people.
Now that I think about it, there is sort of a theme of, you know, sticking it to the man, to the authorities.
Yeah, a lot.
It's definitely masculinity involved in this, and I guess, yeah, a lot of young men would have probably liked this movie a lot more than women, to be fair.
That's, yeah.
But I think anything that you make, any project or production that you make, like we know, you have to dial into a target audience, and that's it's part of the battle. And the closer you can make something that hits your target audience needs, even if you only get that target audience, you're still going to get an audience. And I suppose that's basically how these productions work, especially these kind of smaller productions and productions that kind of talk about these kind of topics and stuff and are trying to engage with those parts. And obviously, lastly, it can't claim to be a cult film from the get-go. And no, I agree that it didn't, but it very, very quickly became a cult film, though. And that's not something that happens overnight, I suppose, over a long period of time. But I think it's one of these films that definitely wasn't marketed as a cult film, I think this point is more due to cult film being a genre now. I was talking to some people doing research for the podcast, and they were bringing up that cult film seems to be a genre where people are trying to hit films and make films for the cult film market. And I feel like that's definitely not the right way to go about trying to make a cult film, because I feel like you're probably not going to be a cult film if you do that. I think the best way to make a cult film is make a film that you're passionate about and it will find an audience, whether it's at the cinema or if it's on the secondary sort of streaming DVD market. You will find that, and your audience, if they like it, you will get that plaudit.
Yeah, this is an easy one to tick off, really. It never claims to be a cult movie, and it just speaks for itself, really. It's about a movie from a gang's point of view in life, and that's all there is to really say about it.
I think with this point, really, it's doesn't claim to be a cult film. This point is mainly for newer films, because films back then, kind of the 70s and stuff like that, no film was, I don't think, was really trying as, well, definitely not as much as they are now to be a cult film. I feel like it was much more just kind of accidental. I mean, this film, when you look at it now, you're like, yeah, this film's quite obviously was going to become a cult film, but at the time it probably wasn't expected. But nowadays, people try and get for that sweet spot, so it's really weird.
Well, there you have it, folks. That's our interpretation here at Cult Film Cafe of breaking down movies to see if they achieve cult film status. Now, as you can tell by that, the Warriors ticked a lot of those boxes, and it's safe to say that you maybe know what our opinions are now. But don't forget to tune in to episode 3, where we'll be giving our opinions on whether we believe the film has cult status and if it belongs on the poster of the 100 cult, must-see cult films. And don't forget to get involved with the podcast over on our Instagram at Cult Film Cafe, and you can email us at thecultfilmpodcast@gmail.com. And thanks for listening. I'll see you again on episode 3.
See you soon.
See ya.